The following message is copyrighted by Westminster Theological Seminary. Duplication, distribution, or other use of all or any part of this message is not permitted without prior written consent. Please direct your inquiries to communications@wts.edu. For all other information, please visit the main website at www.wts.edu.
Last time we were looking at Martin Heidegger, looking at his work of 1927, Being and Time, or Sein und Zeit, and we indicated that he was trying to get obtain an entree to an ontology. He wanted to avoid objectivism on the one hand and subjectivism on the other, and that he tried to find a structuration of being, a structuration that could be entered and found by way of an analysis of Dasein. Dasein is simply translated being there, and as we shall see more closely, and we have seen already in Germ, the idea that Dasein is there in a preeminent sense. It is not there as we might view things simply in the world, things that are in general, but it is then in a way that sticks out in a preeminent fashion. It is there, as we've come to see already, that would mean that it is historic or it is geschichtlich. Well, we looked at one of the existentials, as he calls them, or existentialen, and we mentioned that man is being in the world, and that as being in the world, then we were just about coming to the place where we were going to discuss spatialization, which is another existential. Well, we then look at another existential, namely that if man is creating his world at all time, then what he is doing, he is arranging things, you might say, so that some things are closer and other things are farther away. Now, this is not supposed to be something that is a matter of geometrical space. Rather, he says, Dasein spatializes. That means, for one thing, it's always reaching out to draw in more objects into its world, to incorporate more objects in its world. It's always engaged in annihilating the distance between itself and objects. And the second place, as I suggested a moment ago, Dasein organizes the objects into qualitative, non-homogeneous order, in which some objects are at the center and others are at the periphery of a totality of meaning relations. We can get an idea of what this means, and I think I gave this illustration last time too, that I could be in a certain way very far from my next door neighbor, and that I could be very close in certain fashions to a relative of mine who lives even rather far away, perhaps in the next city or perhaps even across the country. Sociology takes this kind of thing into consideration when it talks about the relationships of community and communality. But that is not exactly what Heidegger means, not to just simply give us a sociological distinction. Rather, spatialization, he says, is an existential or an existential, that is, given our lives, given what is going on, there is this spatializing which is always present, in which things are brought into our world of objects, and they are given then a qualitative, non-homogeneous order. Now, as we noticed, Dasein exists as the possibility of being, because it is unstable. because it is always transcending itself. It's always involved in projecting its possibilities. It's always involved in creating afresh the meaningful relationships which constitute its world. Now, if we understand what it means that this is an existential or existential, we'll understand this is something, not something that Dasein may do or may not do. That's not the idea. It's not that we could then be creating our world and spatializing, or we might not create our world and spatialize. Rather, this is something that Dasein does all the time. It's preoccupation. This is the usual activity of Dasein. It's the character of the relatedness of Dasein to the world, the everyday ongoing existence of Dasein to do this. And Heidegger also describes this relation to the world in the terms of carefulness. If you are going to write that in English, it might be a good idea to write care and then a hyphen, and then fullness afterward. It's a carefulness, not that we're careful, but we have a relation of caring to the world. Now this then is a profound interestedness. We are very profoundly interested in this. And this is also power. Knowledge is power, and knowledge then is a useful tool to help man manipulate the things in his world, the pragmata in his world, and to form them then into meaningful wholes. So we find that, according to Heidegger here, that man is really the creator then of the meaningful interrelatedness in his world, the interrelated pragmata. He relates them, and this constitutes the web of meaning that the world is. Now, to be sure, this Dasein then cannot be the creator of pure facticity. He never suggests, of course, that the Dasein creates the atoms and the molecules and just the bare facticity of the world. But the idea, furthermore, is that this facticity is completely meaningless without Dasein. It's Dasein that, in its activity, that gives meaning to its world. I think we just ought to pause just a moment at this point to realize then that this is a very important point here, that one that has many consequences, that man is the creator of the meaningfulness of his world, and that the world then is meaningless, that things are meaningless apart then from this, which is quite opposite to the position that I believe that you and I take, and at least the position that's going to be taken in this course. So without Dasein, there's no world, there's no cosmos, there's only disorder and meaninglessness. It is Dasein, then, is the author of all intelligibility, is the author of the being of the world, because being involves meaning. And so this is related, then, to man's being in the world, that there's always this creative activity, there's always his bringing of intelligibility in the world. So man is the being of the world, and man then is at the same time the being of all brute fact, because he's bringing meaning into the world at every point. Now, as we have seen then, Heidegger presents basically a humanistic idea of freedom. Dasein is in contrast to nature. Dasein, in contrast to nature, is free. At the same time, in a certain peculiar sense, Dasein is not free because it's doomed to transcend itself. It cannot extricate itself from these relationships. It's not entering into them by way of an act of will, let's say. It cannot extricate itself from these relationships, and is doomed to transcend itself, is doomed to constitute itself and its world. And the very being of Dasein, Heidegger says, depends on its own creative interpretation, on its own. We've run across this word before, Verstehen. The German word Verstehen, which is often we just translate it as empathetic understanding. Here, perhaps, just simply an understanding that in this creativity, we understand ourselves and we constitute ourselves and our world. And so, we then are our own ground. Dasein is its own ground. What does that mean? It doesn't have its ground anywhere else. It cannot refer to anything else to understand its being, but it must refer to itself. It's its own ground, and as Heidegger says, that he says freedom is the ground of the ground. As we reflect on ourselves, as we as Dasein reflect on ourselves, we then reflect on ourselves as free beings, and we cannot reflect any further than that. Freedom is the ground of the ground. Now, I went through this fairly quickly because of the fact that we've been leading up to it, and it's to a great measure just a repetition or just drawing out some implications of what we've said already. But going on here now, we come to something a bit new. It is only if Dasein acknowledges, only if it takes upon itself the burden of this perpetual self-constituting of itself and its world. Only if it does this is it truly itself. Only then is it authentic existence. It's only then as we realize what we are, realize then that we are, as Dasein, that there is no ground to which we can refer into some valuing or some world order, world view, some metaphysical order, some understanding of ourselves in terms of cause, effect, and relationships or anything like that. But it's only when we realize that we are, as it were, circling around ourselves this way, that we acknowledge that we are self-constituting and that we constitute our world. It's only as we take this burden of perpetual free self-constitution on ourselves are we authentic existence. But it is only by way of exception, Heidegger said, that Dasein is authentic. If we look then at how we just look around in general, how people are, we would say then inauthentic. If we look at our quote-unquote natural existence, we'd have to say inauthentic. It's only by way of exception that Dasein is authentic. The first and most common attitude of Dasein is to smother the realization of his true condition. Perhaps we could say, besides smother, we could say that it is the natural tendency of Dasein then to mask his true character. to veil his true character, and to flee from it into what Heidegger called Das Man. Now, you know, in English, I will not wager what it is in Korean, of course, but in English, M-A-N refers to man. Now, something like that, the character, right? Is that correct? At any rate, I managed to get it, because I remember that the Chinese character for man is like two legs, right? Okay. Well, at any rate, we managed that one. But man, M-A-N, in English is simply man. But when you talk about Mann in German, it doesn't mean man, it means one. Man hat, one has, etc. So when Heidegger talks about Mann, he's talking about one, and when he talks about Das Mann, he's talking about the one, or the impersonal one. And so the tendency of Dasein is to veil its true existence, to smother the realization of its true condition, and to flee from it into the impersonal one, or Das Mann. And this occurs, Heidegger said, when Dasein relates to itself as if it were a piece of nature, as if it were simply at hand, like a thing here. Well, the piece of chalk that I'm using is simply at hand. It's simply there, out there, can be used, and so forth. This occurs, namely, that Dasein considers itself in the inauthentic mode when it relates to itself as if it were a piece of nature, with a given and secure existence. Now, one little comment. This weekend, of course, people have been on tenterhooks, wondering what the stock market would be, and one wondering about the security of his existence. Again, that is not quite what Heidegger has in mind. On the other hand, it does give us at least some kind of analogy of insecurity. And when in inauthentic mode, Dasein seeks for its own security, it interprets its existence according to the model of a thing, it falls into inauthenticity, a denial and distortion of itself.
It sounds like a type of salvation, but it's only...
It's an idea of salvation. What's the point?
What's in it for you?
Now,
why should I become authentic?
Well, if I were to try to take a standpoint within Heidegger's position here, then I say your very asking of that question is inauthentic. You're asking what's in it for me. In other words, you're asking then how can I benefit from a relationship. I draw on the board sometimes an S and a dash and an O, and then a line going from the top of the S around the O and back toward the S again with a little arrow on it at the end. Here I am, a certain object for a certain use. That is the pattern of nature. And what you're asking then, what's in it for me? Subject, object, for a certain purpose. And in this kind of thinking, you don't, the idea is in the authentic, you really don't ask that. But there is, as I try to point out, a reflection on the self within this pattern, a reflection on the self in its presumed autonomy and freedom, that it has this ground in itself, and that it then take this burden, if you will, it understand itself in this situation, that it does not have any ground outside of itself, but that it is self-creating. Now, one can say about that what he will. I'm just trying to interpret it here. Of course, from a Christian point of view, I say we have we have to reconstruct the whole thing. But I'm just trying to be a devil's advocate at the moment and to say, well, one wouldn't ask that, because to ask that question would immediately mean that you're inauthentic.
Well, then you ought.
All right. Now, if you insist on identifying moral imperative with integrity, I can't do anything about it. The thing is that from the Heidegger point of view, you wouldn't be able to do that. Because your integrity, being yourself, is to be yourself unveiled. That the mask is ripped off, unveiled, so that you see yourself as you really are. And why do you do that? It is simply a matter of integrity. Yes, you're true to yourself.
Right, and for somebody who doesn't.
That is one of the real difficulties, that is one of the real characteristics of a transmoral position. This is a transmoral position. You're trying to get beyond valuation. You're trying to get beyond moral imperative. This is supposed to do nothing with valuation. On the other hand, you are using these terms. Now, how are you using them? Now, from, again, a Christian point of view, we might say what you're trying is impossible. And the fact that you are using these terms this way shows that it's impossible. But to understand what he's trying to do, you have to work your way into his scheme of thought, all the while trying to notice the difficulties. Yes. Well, now... again, I sort of have to back off for such a question, because you asked me how it's possible. My inclination would be to say it isn't possible. On the other hand, I'm not, first of all, concerned with that at the moment, but I want to present Heidegger as much as possible from inside, all the time, stimulating the kind of question that you're asking. How is it possible? If I were to explain how it were possible in some way, again, I would legitimate it. And I don't want to do that. I just don't believe that man creates himself. You say, well, how then? Is that the first question that he might ask? Or is he simply trying to describe things the way they are? That would be his phenomenological... Well, okay. I think a question like that has to be interpreted. If one would mean, how does he find one foundation fact that somehow exists apart from his own creativity, and so he can have that as kind of a lodestone to refer to, then he'd have to reject the question as illegitimate again. Then you would be, that's looking for something inauthentic. Now, I'm playing the devil's advocate here. I'm trying to see it from inside there. And just for one thing, keep on pushing us. I'm suggesting that there is a religious orientation here, that the only way you can really interpret this is to see the view of man behind it, the view of human freedom behind it, to see the structure of his thinking, which to my mind then would be basically religious, and to penetrate and keep on penetrating until you can see that. Both of you have asked questions which are very good. On the other hand, if you ask that type of question, you have to get used to the idea that very likely anyone who would take this position would simply try to disqualify you immediately by saying, if you ask that kind of question, that involves you must reflect on yourself, you are then inauthentic in asking that. Then you have to ask deeper, have to go deeper, follow them along, and yet break it open. All right, yes.
Yeah. Even though we...
Advocating. Yes. Now, he would deny that. We'll get to that later on. He would say, no, I'm not advocating that you be authentic. Now, you would say, how in the world can you talk that way and still say you're not advocating it? again, don't ask me to defend him too well, but his position will not allow him, for one thing, to say he's advocating it. And because that would bring a valuing in, some kind of a moral distinction or something like that, and he will simply refuse to do that. Now you say, well, where in the world? How do you get that way? And if you want to ask that at this point, well and good. And let's see if we can penetrate then just a little bit farther. Okay. Then, as I say, the tendency then of Dasein is to flee its own existence, to try to get away from its own existence, to veil its true existence. As first when we look, it's inauthentic, and then he will say that authenticity is simply a modification of inauthenticity, that it doesn't take inauthenticity out of the way, but it is simply a modification of inauthenticity. Now, to go on, according to Heidegger, then, inauthenticity is not a diminution of being. Now here we get to that question, you know, the valuation again. Inauthenticity. It sounds quite valuational, doesn't it? But he says, no, it isn't. It's not a diminution of being. It's a mode of being of Dasein. It's an existential. It's a structuration of your existence. And it's given along with the being in the world of Dasein. Dasein is being in the world, and given along with this being in the world, it is inauthentic. Now, as we said, in the inauthentic mode of existence, then, Dasein is under the tyranny of what Heidegger called das Mann. I explained that is not the man, but the impersonal one. Man hat, one has. Das Mann, the impersonal one. Now, he says, this is no one in particular. It's in general, then. It's a neuter, impersonal force, a leveling power that tends to average out everything. It militates against individuality, exceptionality, responsibility. There is again an analogy within the, might say, real world, apart from such thoughts. When I was in high school, I don't know how your high school was, either in this country or out of it, but anyone who took Latin was regarded to be somewhat of an oddity in our high school campus. Now, I had partly that difficulty because I took Latin, but there weren't many of us, and we were regarded to be somewhat of an oddity. The tendency is very often, especially among young people, of course, to try to disappear into the crowd, to disappear into the group. I had, in Southern California one time, I was deposited there as a young divinity student, shall I say. I was just out there doing some work when I was a student at Westminster. And I got a class of all these girls, teenage girls. Well, at any rate, I couldn't get a thing out of them. I mean, I ask them a question, they just sit there. And I try to stimulate them to say something. Then I asked them, what are you afraid of the most? That began to get their interest. And I told them what they were afraid of, because I didn't get it out of them even at that. I say, what you are afraid of the most is being shown up before your peers. Now that broke the ice just a little bit. But those are a couple of distant analogies anyway to what Heidegger is talking about here, that das Mann, or the generality, has an averaging out quality, militates against individuality, militates against exceptionality, responsibility. In the inauthentic mode, it is the impersonal one that dictates what one is to be or do. Now, it begins to sound psychological and sociological here very much, but it's not supposed to be, simply at least. Something is true because one says so. There's social pressure. Do I do something? It's because one does it. Custom. Again, social matter. Shall I die sometime? Yes, because one dies. Everybody dies. One dies. And so the impersonal one permits actions. It establishes opinions. It is the source of a world and life view. But everything then, as he says, is impersonal, is talked about in general terms. One does this and one does that. A question that comes up immediately, of course, is if Heidegger speaks in terms which are suggested of sociology and psychology, or the social and the psychical, how does he get beyond it? Because he just can't stay there. He has to try to get beyond. This is supposed to be beyond either psychology or sociology, and nevertheless he speaks in these terms. Now, under the domination of Das Mann, everything becomes neuter. Dasein loses all individuality, is replaceable by any other. Now, there is a very major theme of existential thinking, and also personalistic thinking, that if a person, if one is just an instance of a general rule or a class, if I draw a line up here and then I draw four vertical lines under it, as I want to do, if one thinks of the horizontal line then as a general rule and the lines underneath, the vertical lines underneath, as instances of that, then that's the pattern that he wants to avoid. Because if we think in that pattern, if we think of ourselves in that pattern, we're replaceable. We're replaceable by someone else, and or by any other. One becomes an integer, becomes simply a number. You were not around, perhaps, when there was a great hue and cry about whether, in this country, whether we should have zip codes. No one's old enough to remember that, is he? Well, anyway, no. But maybe you remember, if not about the 5-number zip code, about the 9-number zip code, and hue and cry about that. I do use the 9-number zip code myself. I don't feel particularly threatened by it. But people have objected that we become just simply numbers, or our houses are identified as numbers, and that somehow is unworthy. Existential thinking takes that and pushes it as deeply as it can. Furthermore, inauthentic existence is characterized by what Heidegger called gerede, and this is G-E-R. It's groundless talking about everything. If you read the funny pictures and read Andy Capp, which I'm sure you do, it's the natter-natter that they talk about over the fence and something. A groundless talking about everything without ever establishing real contact with the object of conversation. It's kind of an aimless talking, a groundless talking. And I do understand Heidegger took his own position quite seriously. When he would go to social functions, he was silent almost the entire time because he didn't. That sounds valuational, doesn't it? In any case, he was quiet most of the time. Under the domination of Das Mann, one feels himself qualified to speak about everything. But Heidegger put it, he falls into the dilemma of not knowing what it is he does not know, and of not knowing what he knows. That, I suppose, is to express the groundlessness of the whole thing. Inauthentic existence is not only then this aimless talking and groundlessness, but it's also fundamentally curious. It has what the Germans call Neugier, N-E-U-G-I-E-R, just fundamentally curious, desiring newness for newness' sake, an attitude described by Kierkegaard, for one, in the what he called the aesthetic attitude. It gives the appearance, then, of intellectuality, gives the impression of being interesting. There's the experience of great activity, but he maintains that this activity is meaningless. It is really empty. Yes. If one is always looking for something new, if every time he tries something, he's got to put that aside and try something else, I suppose he could qualify as dilettante. It would be a dilettantism. However, again, we've got to remember that all the time we're talking this way, we have to remember whether he can do it or not, is that Heidegger wants to go beyond. He wants to penetrate to a quote-unquote level beyond simply calling things dilettante or other. But now, another point, because we were just describing the way Dasein goes at things as inauthentic. In return, it's given a false sense of security. As I mentioned, there is a process of what is called thingification. I may have used this word before, but it is a word that is very often used, that there is a process of thingification, namely, Dasein views itself as if it were a thing, as if its being and its world were established once and for all and secure. In return for this, it has the sense then of security. So, the inauthentic mode of being of Dasein is thus analogous to an escape mechanism. This kind of idea is very widespread. You look at things as they are in general. And as I point out in a dialectical type of thinking, you don't simply remove that, but you subject it to a hermeneutic. You interpret it in depth. You try to get behind it, and you see then that what is on the surface is an escape mechanism. That is what Heidegger is trying to do. It is a means of escape for Dasein, which is incapable, he says, of facing the reality of his nature. It does this by throwing itself on its world. It tries to lose itself in practical action. And one throws himself into practical activity, daily practical activity, in the everyday world. And so one comes to interpret himself as if it were just another thing in the world. Well, now, yet his true nature is very different from this, because Heidegger reminds us that in reality, human existence is without foundation or ground. It rests upon nothing. I emphasize all along the encounter with nothing that is, or nothingness that is so important to existential thinking. Here you have it again. What do we rest on? We don't live in a secure world, but our existence rests upon nothingness, or das Nichts. It's always transcending itself into nothingness, projecting its possibilities. And my former colleague, Dr. Van Til, used then to say constantly at this point that one would be projecting himself in his possibilities over the void. Over the void. It's like you fall into bottomless canyon. Now, perhaps some of you are not old enough even to know what I'm talking about. When in Little Abner, do you remember when Little Abner was in the funny pictures? You do? Oh, great. In any case, there was Bottomless Canyon, and somebody would fall into Bottomless Canyon. I think that there were certain windows, you know, you could look out and see them falling past you. One might say he's projecting his possibilities over the void, or in projecting his possibilities, he has fallen into Bottomless Canyon. Well, if we make this kind of statement, it's not at all surprising, because Heidegger, of course, has taken an antithetical stance from the very beginning against any divinely given world order, against any metaphysics, against any value system, against any way you might think of deriving yourself by causal interpretation. In Heidegger's thought, at least, if we think of God and his creation in the way we have just done so, God is removed and replaced by nothing, or rather, nothingness. And our creative activity is in this context, we might say it is a constant struggle in the context of this nothingness. Now, in this connection, Heidegger develops his idea then of coming to awareness and dereliction. Coming to awareness and dereliction. Now let's try to get some idea of what we mean here. In the German, Befindlichkeit, and then the second one, Geworfenheit. That one is thrown or geworfen, this dereliction. Befindlichkeit, I said, coming to awareness. Now, in the notion, in the first notion, Befindlichkeit, Heidegger wishes to express the primacy of mood or Stimmung over rational reflection. If we think rationally, if we seek then to think rationally or express ourselves by making choices of will, etc. There is something deeper, he says. This is surpassed and dominated by mood, by Stimmung, over which there is but limited control. I should think in the depth of it, no control. But Heidegger, again, does not want to express simply a psychological situation. We have moods. Some have bigger mood swings than others. But Heidegger doesn't want simply to have a psychological explanation, but he wants, again, to have something deeper, something of ontological significance. Because the idea is that when Dasein comes to awareness, it finds itself already in a situation it did not choose for itself and over which it has a very limited control. If I do something, if I act, then already, you might say, I am given to myself in my act. And we come to awareness, one finds himself already in a situation which one did not choose for himself and over which he has very limited control. And so Dasein sees itself as given, is creating itself all the time, but at the same time it sees itself as given, as already there in a most fundamental sense. So if I am creating myself, that's one side of it, then on the other side of it, I must realize that I am already there. I'm already given to myself in the most fundamental sense. And so, Dasein is given in a particular time, in a particular place, with a particular understanding of itself and its world. But remember that we're trying to go past the psychological to an ontological level. You have to read these in that way. But one is given to himself in a particular understanding of himself and his world. The one time this understanding is that in terms of which we create ourselves, on the other hand, we are given to ourselves in a particular understanding. When Dasein comes to consciousness, when it comes to awareness, it is, as it were, already embarked. When it comes to awareness, it is, as it were, already embarked. I use an illustration here, which I suppose is a good one for summertime, but it might not be a bad one for wintertime either, or fall. Supposing you are on the edge of a lake, you have a rowboat or a canoe there, and you have a little jetty or whatever you need, little dock, and your rowboat is there. Imagine then stepping into the rowboat, and the moment you step into the rowboat, you are already embarked. Now, you can't imagine that, can you? Because it's really impossible. I mean, you can't, at the moment you're stepping into the rowboat, you can't be already embarked, because you have to step first into the rowboat and then embark. But to get a sense of what is meant here, you have to stretch your mind and try to envisage something which is impossible, that you step into the rowboat, you're already embarked. And so as one is creating himself, as one then is creating himself as self-understanding, he is at the same time given to himself in his self-understanding. There is the, as other thinkers will put it, there's freedom and destiny together at the same time. Yes. Does it impinge on it? Well, that's a real question, the way you look at it. Because what he's trying to do is to think of this in such a fashion that the givenness would not be an external limitation. Not an external limitation. I have certain limitations. I mean, well, for one thing, I'm all tangled up with this cord here, and I do have some freedom of movement, but as long as I keep the mic on, I don't have that much. So there's an external limitation of what I'm able to do, what I'm able to move. But that's not the idea. It's not supposed to be an external limitation, but rather in the very sense, in the very meaning of freedom itself, there is this givenness. And here, again, is a self-reflection of Dasein on itself, and in our reformed way of analyzing things, we have again and again shown how this self-reflection falls then within the scheme of nature and freedom. That there's the givenness of nature, that there is a freedom of the self-constituting, but the self-constituting and being given to itself are simultaneous and they interact, intersect, you might say. And so let me simply mention who analyzes things this way. Hermann Dooyeweerd has said then in the self-reflection here, Dasein, the analysis of Dasein is under the control, is under the domination of the motive of nature and freedom. And so that we see there is a religious motive here, which is at work in this analysis. Well, at any rate, we have to try to get a hold of this. And this illustration of mine, even though it's not just a matter of stretching your mind, you just have to say, this is impossible to step in a boat and be already embarked at the same moment. But that's exactly what you have to visualize here if you're going to grasp what Heidegger means. So, Dasein cannot transcend its situation. It cannot look down on life. It cannot interpret the meaning of life from a superordinated standpoint. It cannot occupy, you might say, as some might put it, a standpoint as if it were God, or other ones have used the star Sirius as a reference point. We cannot assume the standpoint of this superordinated star Sirius and look down on our life. Sirius, then S-I-R-I-U-S. We cannot take the standpoint of God or Sirius, but we have to realize that we are in medias res, that we are constantly in situation. So, if Dasein is simply there, if that's one side of it, its existence is a fact of which it cannot then give a final reason. One is born of his mother, but this is only a biotical origin. One might ask, why am I born at all? Why was I born now instead of some other time? But the deeper question that Heidegger asks here, and that has been picked up, it's not only his thought, it persons before him and also after him, why is there something rather than nothing? Why is there something rather than nothing? That would be an ultimate question that one could ask. And such a question points man to the ultimate brute facticity of his existence. Ultimately, finally, it is simply given. It cannot be accounted for except at the price of falling into inauthentic existence. Even your freedom is given. Even it is a facticity. One is not able to step out of his freedom. Even the denial of freedom is an act of freedom, Heidegger says. And so at the same time, we say there's a primacy of mood or Stimmung. We have to say that there then is also the fact that Dasein is geworfen. It is thrown, you might say, into the world. It is derelicted without any recourse, without being able then to have any recourse, without being able to have find any foundation then for its meaning and being.